This is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. The program is sponsored tonight by the Business and Leadership Member-Led Forum, Kevin O'Malley, Chair. Our program tonight is 15 Mind-Blowing Success Secrets for Small Businesses. Come and learn some uncommon wisdom with Rick Gilbert, founder of Power Speaking Incorporated, a speech communication training program in Redwood City. Rick has an unusual background, not one you'd expect for a business speaker. After college, he worked for the United States Public Health Service in local health department in the venereal disease clinic. He has lots of interesting stories to tell you from that job. He says if you'll buy him a beer, he'll be happy to tell you all about it. From there, he worked in the emergency room at Kaiser Hospital in San Francisco. Now, there was a very peaceful, quiet, calm, collected job. He saw everything from babies being born to gunshot wounds to heart attacks. Truly, there was never a dull moment. He went on to earn a PhD in psychology with a dissertation called Jazz, Rock, and Roll and the Revolution in Psychotherapy, 1950 to 1975. And it was at this point in both our lives that Rick and I began to know each other through our studies. Mine were not in rock and roll, but they were in the doctoral program. So it was really nice to have him here tonight to share that with him. We have lots of good memories of that time. Somehow, he thought that all this prepared him to create and run a training company in Silicon Valley. So in 1985, Rick started Power Speaking Incorporated, a communication company that is still going strong. With the clarity of 2020 hindsight, which we all have, of a retired entrepreneur, this evening Rick will share the lessons he's learned along the way. Please welcome Rick Gilbert.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. Was blind, but now I see.
All right.
So, welcome to this program. I started with that song because I love Amazing Grace. And why I like it so much is because it's about salvation, if you will. It's about going from something horrible to something better. And we're not going to have a religious service here tonight. We're going to have a business service, but it's still going to be about going from a wretched state to a state of grace. Because when I started this company in 1985, I was all full of myself, you know, chest pounding. I was an entrepreneur. I remember even writing some memos saying, we ain't going to use no lawyers because it's all going to be on a handshake, and, you know, this is going to be great. And I was just full of myself. And, of course, I was a wretch. And what happened is, as the company grew over time, we, and me in particular, learned a lot of stuff from clients, from research, from each other, from experience, and we figured out the way this really should be done, which was very different than how we started. And so I call that sort of the state of grace. So if you can imagine from being a wretch to the state of grace, that's why that song is so helpful, I think. Now, this is about running a small business or starting a small business. I'd be curious how many of you have either run or in working in or started a small business. Can I see a show of hands, please? Whoa, that's almost 100. Okay, 100%. That's terrific. You're in the right place. What I plan to do here is tell you a little bit about what we learned in our business, and my fervent hope will be that when you leave here tonight, you're going to take away two or three ideas that will actually help your business. I've talked to several people already, some who are budding entrepreneurs planning to start a business, some who've already started businesses, some are long into their business, and I'm hoping that somewhere along the line, I'll share with you some ideas that will help you. Now, you'll notice that on your handout, it says 12 tips. And the advertising was it was going to be 15 mind-blowing tips. Well, when I put this thing together months ago, I wanted to give myself lots of room because I didn't know exactly how many tips there were going to be. And so I had to throw some away, and so you got 12. And these are much better than the 15. You're getting a good deal here. And so we're going to go through these tips, and they fall into two categories. One is I'm calling the fast five, and then the other is called the soft seven, and I'll explain that as we go along. And as we talk about this, there are going to be three things I really, really want you to take away from this, out of these 12. One is that it's all about relationship. Two is you got to be a risk taker. And three is your partner is critical. So if you would, remember those things: relationship, risks, and partner. So let's look at, and we're going to do a little bit, I'm going to ask you to really get involved with this. That's why I gave you this handout that has the scale of 1 to 5 and the 12 topics. And as I go along, I would love to have you circle one of these numbers. Just say, this doesn't mean a thing to me. I think this is really off the mark. Or 5 would be, this is terrific. Or I already do this. Or this is a new idea. I'm excited about it. So, because then we're going to talk a little bit about it in detail in a few minutes. So let's get started. Let's start with the fast five. Here we go. How many of you have heard this concept, work-life balance? Show of hands. Very common, right? Well, what I found out in running our business is that work-life balance is mostly nonsense. If you are running a small business, it's work. And it's more work, and it's not balance. It's work. And I look at our 30 years of running our company. I started the company in... Quick background. I was a college instructor for a while, and then I was a PhD psychologist, and then I went into business at Hewlett-Packard and Amdahl, and then started this company in 1985. And I was 46 years old, and so it's been going for 30 years. I'm 76 now, and I retired this last year. Well, so what we found out along the way is that when you're running your own business, you're doing it day and night. I mean, it's 24/7, 365 days a year. My wife, who now owns the business and started with me, is back there running the camera. That's Mary McGlynn. So I'll be talking a little bit about her as we go along. But the two of us started this thing, and I mean, I started, and she came on board. And I'll tell you, in 30 years, if we have had more than two or three vacations of more than 5 days, I'll be surprised. You know, okay, it's Thanksgiving, so you take a few days off, and that's your vacation, right? You don't go for a month to tour, the Middle East or something. You know, I mean, we didn't do it. We didn't have the time. You're working at this all the time. And that's good. I mean, I'm really glad. I wish I could have done it when I was younger than 46, because I don't care about vacation. What I care about is building my business and having exciting, the thrill of doing this, what we were doing. Being an entrepreneur is unbelievably powerful stuff. I never would have used that word I didn't know what I was going to do when I grew up. My father worked for one company his whole life. I had no idea what I was going to do. And then suddenly, I started saying, well, I'm going to start my own company. And off I went to the races. So I'm going to tell you what I learned. Hopefully, if you're starting at the beginning, you'll be able to save a little bit of time. This business of work-life balance came very clear to me with a woman that you may have heard of called Carol Bartz. Anybody know Carol Bartz? Show of hands. She was the CEO of Yahoo most recently and was ingloriously fired on the phone. But I love this Carol Bartz. And I've seen her speak a couple of times. And she's very... right to the point, and no-nonsense kind of gal. And she thinks that work-life balance is just a silly concept. So I want to read to you what she said. Work-life balance is a myth that only leads to counterproductive guilt for working mothers. She warns, women put a lot of pressure on themselves. They think, quote, I'm going to cook a great breakfast, wash up the dishes before I leave, take the kids to school, call my college roommate on the way to work, be a CEO all day, volunteer on the way home, do a little exercising, cook a wonderful dinner, help with homework, and have sex. She says, I don't think so. So that's Carol Bars, and I think that's that is so helpful to just get if you want to do this stuff, it's fabulously rewarding in my experience, but it's not about balance. The next one is contractors versus employees. How many of you work in a small business that have employees? Show of hands. Okay, a few of you. We found that we started initially to hire trainers to do our training for us, and they were contractors. And it made sense because they only worked a couple days a week for us. And they had other things they did. They were consultants or they, you know, were whatever they did. They had lots of other things to do. So they were contractors. And at this time, we had a lawyer on our board, and we were crystal clear what the rules are. We weren't trying to cheat the government in any way. These are contractors, not employees. So they handle their taxes. We don't. All right? Very simple. About 5 or 6 years into it, the IRS comes and wants to do an audit. By that time, we had 10, let's say, about 10 contractors. They did this audit, and they said, absolutely, these people are contractors. There was this higher-up guy in San Francisco, the area IRS guy. That was great. So we were squeaky clean as far as the IRS was concerned. Several years later, the IRS came back, did it again. Same exact outcome. These people are absolutely contractors. You know about Uber? Everybody knows about this thing in the paper? Uber's going through this right now, big time. Are these drivers independent contractors or employees? Well, a couple of years ago, California comes to us, and the state of California says, these people are employees. We said, oh, no, California. The IRS said, we're really good with this. We're cool. Everything's great. And you know what the California said to us? Said, we're not the IRS. We don't care what they said. They're employees. And so we went on a big roller coaster ride with California because California was having a huge budget problem, as were a lot of the states after 2008. My personal judgment is we're having a lot of problems because the voters won't approve legislation to tax the wealthy. So we want the wealthy to pay as little tax as possible so we can pay it, us small business people. So we lost, and we had to pay back taxes, penalties, and, of course, lawyers' fees. And now we had to take 20 people and turn them all into employees. Enormous amount of headache, real hassle. Bottom line, if you're starting a business and you're thinking about hiring somebody, boy, if you want to call them an independent contractor, you really better know what you're talking about. Because it could go down the year, 5 years down the road, and you'll be really screwed and be so sorry because you'll have all of this this money, these finances, this penalties you'll have to pay. So point number two, make people employees as much as possible. All these people now buy for us are permanent, part-time employees. The fact they're part-time doesn't make them contractors. Board of directors. This is so easy. We had a board of directors while I was still working for Amdahl and still was a corporate employee. I had a board of directors. They're actually board of advisors. If you're starting a small company, I urge you to think about getting a board of directors. We found that we would ask friends who knew more about business than we did. We paid them nothing. They'd come on quarterly for Saturday morning. We'd give them a bagel and cream cheese breakfast, and we'd sit around for 3 hours, and they'd help us with our business. And they loved doing it, by the way. They got to be friends with each other. They learned from each other, and it was hugely important to us as a small business. So if you want to know more about that after the program, come and talk to me. I'll show you about how you actually can get people to do this for you. We still have the board. I'll bet you that in the 30 years we've had 25 or 30 people on the board. They come, you know, they might stay for 2 or 3 years or 5 years or whatever. And it's just been enormously helpful to us. So have a board of directors. Skip EBITDA. Forget EBITDA. Anybody know what EBITDA is? You must be in accounting or finance. I had no idea what EBITDA was. And when we got to the point where we were making a little bit of money, let's say our revenue at that point might have been $500,000. And pretty soon you get into more complicated accounting issues. And so I'm sitting in these meetings, and we're talking about stuff like EBITDA. What the hell is EBITDA? Well, I'll tell you what it is. I almost have to write it down here. For earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. Anyway, when we get to that, I'm looking out the window, and there's robins playing in the trees, you know, and I'm just saying, oh, I'm out the window. Because you know what I'm about? I'm about training. I'm not about running a business. I don't like running a business. I don't even like business. It's all about rows and columns of numbers. And so I started beating myself up, saying, I should take an accounting class. I should take a class called Finance for Non-Financial Managers. Why? We hired people to do this. But I somehow felt, as the president of the company and the founder, I should know this stuff. I never learned it. And I hate it. I hate it to this day. So what I would suggest for you, unless you're drawn to the excitement of Quicken and, you know, rows and columns, and skip it. Hire somebody to do it. You have to do it. You can't not do it. I mean, you have to do it. But let somebody who enjoys it do it, and you stay with what your calling is. You know, there's one lady here, she's starting a house, for, you know, home for Alzheimer's patients. That's the calling. She don't want to be an accountant. These ladies here want to do design business. You know, they're starting out. They want to do design. They don't want to sit and look at rows and numbers and columns and so forth. So you got to have it done, but let somebody else do it unless you're excited about it. Now, the last one on our what I'm calling our Fast Five is called Back to the Blackboard. How many use PowerPoint once in a while? Show of hands. Okay, good. Some people might use Keynote, which is the Apple version. And then there's Prezi. There's all these different ideas that you have out there. And you may have heard this expression, death by PowerPoint. Have you heard that? Everybody goes, death by PowerPoint? Ha, 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 ha. Ha. It's not ha, ha, ha. When I did interviews with CEOs in Silicon Valley about what they wanted in their presentations, I'll tell you a little about that in a minute, mid-level people would go in for a 20-minute presentation with a 35-slide PowerPoint deck, and they would wreck their careers. Seriously. I mean, it wasn't ha, 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 death by power, because the senior execs said, I don't want you to sit there and read me slides on the screen. I want us to have a conversation about this issue on the table and move on. In fact, one of the CEOs I interviewed, he said, if you can't talk to me without a slide, I don't give you the money because I don't think you know what you're talking about. So, I mean, bottom line, after 30 years, I'd say, get rid of PowerPoint. There's nothing wrong with PowerPoint. PowerPoint's wonderful. So is Keynote. It's how we use it that is just terrible. So any time you can skip that or not do it, and I'm not saying, you know, you're going to be able to dump it all the time, but people want a conversation. You will notice, what's up here? No slides. How's he doing this? He's doing a whole hour without slides. What a concept. Don't need him. You know, to paraphrase, what was that movie? Sierra Madre. I don't need no stinking PowerPoint. In fact, Stanford did a study recently, and they compared three ways of visual aids. One was PowerPoint and all of those kind of things. The other was the TED Talk, big photograph with a word or two, and the other was a whiteboard. And they found that the whiteboard outclassed the others in 17 to 22% of the time on things like retention of the information, how good and how competent we thought the speaker was, and retention. So what people want is back to the blackboard. You know, we'll call it a whiteboard these days, but up here, boom, do a thing. Forget all the electronics. So those are the Fast Five. And what I hope that those are really simple ideas that you can take to the bank. For example, you know, make sure that you've got your employees, in the correct category, that they're either really not employees and they're contractors or whatever. And, you know, be careful about this PowerPoint. Oh, I'll give you one tip about PowerPoint, and then I want to hear from you. This is the simplest thing you'll learn today, and it may be the most powerful of everything I say. So if you remember nothing, remember this. So you're in your PowerPoint show, and you've got your slide up here, right? Here's your computer. When you hit the B key, what happens? Blackout. Screen goes blank when you hit the B key. What's the benefit of the screen going blank to you as the speaker? People, attention comes back to you. It is the most powerful and still, we've been doing this for 25 years. People still don't know about this tip. So you're up there, you're doing this is our format and our numbers and our data and so forth. Click. Now let's have a discussion about how that affects us moving forward. Screen goes away, you're now in charge. So that's PowerPoint. Okay, now those are five ideas. And what I'd like to do now is stop for just a minute and hear from you. Which of these ideas are making sense to you? Which would you like to elaborate on?
So before we go to the audience, this is the Commonwealth Club of California. Find us on the internet at www.commonwealthclub.org. I'm Ann Clark, a member of the Commonwealth Club and chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. The program tonight is sponsored by the Business and Leadership Member-Led Forum. Kevin O'Malley is their wonderful chair. Our program tonight is 15, although we know now it is 12. 12, mind body, you see we've already lost three. 12 mind-blowing success secrets for small businesses. Come and learn some uncommon wisdom with Rick Gilbert, founder of Power Speaking Incorporated, a speech communication training company in Redwood City. And I must say, I can already feel the power in the room.
Ann, I have a sad announcement because we're getting on the internet thousands of requests for me to play the banjo again. but we just don't have enough time, folks. So, all right, seriously, now what I'd like you to do is look at these quick five, what I call them, the fast five, and tell me which of these ideas kind of resonates for you or does not, or you have some experience with it. And we have two or three minutes here. I'd just like to get some feedback from you. So, yes, please. For our listening audience here,
why don't you? Oh my God, it's too much. Hello, EBITDA, because I'm studying accounting right now, and I think I'm forcing myself to do it for safety, and I'm not following my heart. So that one stuck out for me.
Oh, that point was made for you right now. I you know, and that's just exactly the way. That's exactly the way I felt. You know, that somehow I'm supposed to do this. And I just couldn't keep my. What is your business? What are you most excited about?
Last year was political in nature, transparency, voting rights.
Voting rights. Okay, so you're in the political arena.
Political,
yeah, but that's what turned you on, not learning, EBITDA and accounting.
Yeah.
That's exactly the dilemma that we'll find ourselves in when we're running this business because we feel like we should know it. Other responses to some of these items. Yes, please. Just here, so they can hear you.
Oh, okay. At what point do you think having a board of directors is crucial?
Oh, good. When to have a board of directors? We had a lawyer on our first board, and he said, "You probably want to get that going right at the beginning." In fact, I had my board going before I left corporate. We would meet on Saturdays and have our bagels and everything, and we'd be talking about marketing and finance, and Mary and I at that point were trying to get a second mortgage on the house so we could have a line of credit, and all of this financial stuff had to be set up. And it just felt so good that when I went in to give my resignation for my corporate job, I was able to think, I've got all these people behind me who are helping me. And they were just unbelievably powerful, and they still are. The personalities have changed a little bit. And as the company has grown, the expertise we're looking for on the board is more sophisticated than it was at first. Other reactions? Please.
I can see something about work and life balance. I think if we do what we're passionate about, so work is no more work. It's just enjoyment. And like for me, if I go to network, I choose the people that I think I will like, and I choose the activities I enjoy. So I try to put that into the balance part.
Yes, thank you. What kind of field are you in?
I'm a wealth advisor. I do wealth management and financial planning.
Wow. So for you, when you're doing what you love, it doesn't feel like work. I think most entrepreneurs, at least that I've met, have that kind of feeling about it. So it's not like, oh, I'm missing the big vacation, to the South Sea Island. No. Because have you ever had this? You're away for a couple of days, and you say, I want to get back. We don't have any Wi-Fi. I can't get on. What? okay, one more, then I'm going to move. If I can talk a little bit about the design couple here, we're going to design. Speaking of work-life balances, one of the design principles is pregnant. I'm just, I notice these things. And So my advice to her was something that we did, because when we started our company, Mary was pregnant with our first and only child, and we had also one of our employees who was pregnant. And so we brought on-site childcare. This is tax deductible, by the way. It was a business expense. We were working out of our house, and the child care lady was upstairs with the two babies, and we were working away downstairs earning money to pay for her. And so that would be something to really think about. All right, good. Let's move on now to our soft seven. I call them soft seven because, in a way, these aren't so clear-cut like whether or not to use PowerPoint. This is more, how do you want to live your life? You know, what are your values? Is it about the money or is it about people? It's really about how you want to set the business up and move forward so it's consistent with who you are as a person. I have seven of these, and I want to talk about, and then we're going to talk a little bit at the end about that and how it would affect you. The first one I have for you is know when to be a quitter. Be a quitter. What? What do you say? Be a quitter. But no. Haven't you heard quitters never win and winners never quit? Have you heard that? It's nonsense, folks. It's absolute nonsense. Because what I found in our business was there was an awful lot of times when we did not quit, when we should have. So when do you quit? Well, maybe you have a client that's not working out. Like, you know, you have A clients, B clients, and C clients. Get rid of the C clients. But no, you know, we're nice people and stuff, so we hang on to these folks, dragging a big ball and chain. Or maybe there's an employee that needs to go. Or maybe you need to dump a product that's not working. Or maybe a relationship, you know. It's any of these things. I think for us to doggedly stay with it, because I'm not a quitter, is short-sighted. In fact, in the business community, there is some advice about being a quitter. One is Stephen Covey. Maybe you read that Seven Habits book, and he has one of his ideas is start with the end in mind. And in a way, that's like quitting. When we started the business, the last thing on my mind was quitting. I mean, all I had to do was earn enough money in each quarter to pay my share of the rent in the house, because I'd quit my corporate job and I had no money coming in, and I had spent all of my savings on the business. Plowed in $18,000, every penny I had, into the business. And I was just nervous about making enough money to hold up my end of the deal, because we didn't want the house to fall apart because we owned a house together. So thinking about where was I going to be in 5 years, or much less 30, and how was I going to get out of this business was far from my thinking. My advice to you would be think at the beginning, how am I going to end this? How do I want to get out of it? A book I'd recommend to you is called Built to Sell. Built to Sell. John Warlow. John Warlow. Built to Sell. And what he suggests in this book is that as you develop your business, or even if you're partway through it and you're thinking of selling in a few years, there are things you can do to make the business more appealing to a buyer. We, of course, had no idea about that. Hadn't even thought about it. So think about being a quitter as you start. A personal example of this for me was a couple of years ago I signed up for tap dancing. You know, I mean, I'd been a drummer in high school, and I always liked Gene Kelly and those kind of people, and I thought I'd love to take tap dancing, you know. So I said, San Carlos, you know, rec department, I sign up. I go in the first, and here's about eight women about my age, and they'd been working together for a while, and they were all, and I said, hey, well, how hard can, this is cool. So here I go, you know, shuffle ball change, shuffle ball. But then toward the end of the lesson, I was losing track of it a little bit. And then lesson number two, I was having a little harder time of it. And lesson number three, I stood at the back wall and just watched them. And so I went to the instructor and I said, you know what, this isn't working for me, I quit. And she said, quit? No, you can't quit. What do you mean quit? Don't you know that quitters never win and winners never quit? And I said, well, I don't know if that's true, but I'm not getting it, and so I'm quitting. And she says, you can't quit. Besides that, in our chorus line, we need men. I said, well, that's not my problem. So by the way, folks, here, size 7.5 tap shoes. any reasonable offer will be accepted. So be a quitter, you know, don't stay with things. Number two on my list here. Be slow to hire and fast to fire. Now, when we found that we had a position open, we were really nervous. By the time the ad got produced, we were hurting because we needed somebody to fill this position. And what would happen is our judgment got a little bit cloudy sometimes, and we wouldn't spend enough time at the front end figuring out who this person really was. Well, you know, they look good on paper, and, you know, they seem to have the background, and, you know, never mind the references. That takes too long. Yeah, don't make that mistake. What happened was we needed somebody to do our Excel spreadsheet, you know, technical software, that kind of thing, right? Because none of us had that skill set. So we ran an ad. This woman responded, and she had the skills that we were looking for. She came in for an interview, and the interview went okay, and she wanted to talk about everything, you know, kind of her childhood and everything. And then she said at one point, she said, you know, when I was 12 years old, my brother tried to kill me. Well, now that should have been a red flag. But no, see, we needed somebody really badly. Brought her in. Monday morning she comes in. By Wednesday, she has irritated everybody in the office. She shows what a bad business model we have, how we don't know what we're doing. Our books are all messed up. On. Everybody in the office hated her. And by that time, I wanted to meet her brother and shake his hand. You have good judgment, my friend. And fortunately, we got rid of her on Friday. Now that's that sort of balance. Slow to hire, quick to fire. In that example, we weren't slow enough to hire. But we were quick to fire. But just keep that in the back of your mind. When you're going to bring somebody in, make sure you do enough homework up front so that you really know the package you're getting and you don't make a huge mistake. And don't hang on to somebody longer than you need to, because as you probably know, a bad employee pollutes the whole deal. And other people are looking around saying, why aren't you getting rid of, you know, that person's no good. But you're a nice person, you know, and plus the holidays are around the corner and you don't want to do this to somebody and they have a child and blah, blah, blah. Too bad. I mean, it's tough. If we're going to be in business, I think we have to bite the bullet and sometimes be a leader. And that means getting rid of stuff when it's not working. So, out the door with that. So, be slow to hire and quick to fire. The next one is on my list is taking risks, but calculated risks. Risk-taking in business has been getting a lot of, almost as much as leadership. You know, every other issue of the Harvard Business Review is all about leadership or risk-taking. And for good reason. There's a famous Detroit business, auto executive who said, the biggest risk is no risk at all. Closer to home, Tom Perkins, Silicon Valley VC, said, there must be huge risk for there to be huge success. So this big risk-taking is a big deal, but I'd suggest that it has to be calculated, thought about. Now, as you can tell probably from the talk so far, in my business, I was the one that was probably a little more eager to bounce into something, you know, untried, you know, and out there. And other people kind of pull me back, you know, they were more risk averse than I was, and they'd pull me back, and we'd go back and forth. But there's this one example that was just fabulous, a case study. Do you remember a company called Palm? And you remember they had a thing called the Palm Pilot, which was a thing a little bit like a cell phone, you know, early version of that? They had an ad campaign that just knocked me out. They had a dancer. I think her name was Kate Hunter. She may have been a ballerina, actually. And they had her naked. I don't know if anybody remember these ads. She was completely naked. This one, I remember, she was sitting there like this with her knees up, and she had the Palm Pilot in front of her, and it said, simply Palm. There was another one where she was sideways, all very tasteful. You know, sideways, simply Palm. I thought, oh, my God, that's extraordinary. I think we should do, for advertising for our company, simply power speaking. And the phone becomes the microphone. So I made an appointment with our photographer down there in San Carlos on El Camino, and I went in with my microphone and my towel. Now, the thing that made this sort of interesting and a little bit difficult was she was really foxy. She was about 35 years old and really a looker. And I had to manage my towel, you know, and she got this great photo of me with my knee, just like the ballet dancer, holding like this, except with my microphone. She said, simply power speaking. So we made up 6,000 postcards to go out, and I had my graphics guy make it look just like the palm ad. 6,000 cards to go out. And the day before we were going to send the cards, I thought, geez, boing, maybe I should call Palm and see what they would think of this. So I called the marketing department at Palm, and the guy says, okay, Gilbert, why don't you send me that? A day later, after he got the thing, if we had had Skype at that point, I think his hair would have been on fire. I could have seen it. He was yelling in the phone, and he said, Gilbert, you don't want to do this. If you send this out, you are going to be sued by the dancer, by the photographer, by the graphics person, and mostly by Palm. We are going to squash you like a grape. All righty then. So that ad campaign went away. We never did it. Now. So there's what it looks like. Palm is on the left, and people are averting their eyes. No, this really is a microphone. Anyway, so. So if after all of this you're thinking, boy, you know, this has been such a good session at the Commonwealth Club, I'd really like to go home with a nude picture of Rick. There they are, folks. Those are the actual postcards we were going to use that never, ever saw the light of day. So I think we need to be careful. Come up and grab one if you want. So I think we need to be careful about when we take a risk to do our homework so we don't spend a lot of time and money and get into a place where it's a brick wall. But I will say this. Palm, Power Speaking. Who's still in business? Hey. I mean, I'm just saying. All right. Number four, improvise. I'll bet some of you are jazz fans. And if you are, you know, even if you're not a jazz fan, you probably know this, that jazz is an improvisational musical format. So if you can imagine this continuum. Over here you have classical music and Beethoven, and over here you have jazz and Miles Davis, okay? What I would recommend, from what we've learned, is that to be good in business, to be successful, don't be so much like Beethoven. Be more like Miles Davis. What I mean by that is, as you know, especially with the internet and things moving so fast in business, that you have to be light on your feet. You have to be able to make changes quickly. We can't be, you know, locked into a certain kind of production plan and when things move so fast. Quick example happened to us. In 2001, I was coaching an executive, high-level executive from Silicon Valley, who's a VP of IT, on presentation skills, because he had to make a report to his senior leadership. And I told him to do what we tell all of our people to do, you know, use stories and all that sort of stuff. And so he went and made his presentation, his quarterly presentation, to the CEO and the founders of the company, and they totally creamed him. He got beat up horribly. So I called the COO afterwards, and I said, how come this went so badly for this guy? And he said, he started telling us stories. And I said, using my professor hat, I said, yeah, but don't you understand, Mr. COO, that stories create long-term retention, and the research all shows that, and data does not. And then Mr. COO said something to me that changed our business model from that day to this and turned out to be very profitable for us. He said, we don't care about retention. This is a business meeting. We have to make a decision and move on. And like this light bulb went off, and I stopped being a little professor, and I thought, you know, speaking at the top level is really different than other kinds of business presentations, I guess. So at that point, we started interviewing CEOs. We've interviewed probably 40 to 50, a lot of them on video, and my whole team, we began to get improvisational, you know. We had to dump the old model, so one kind of speech for everybody else. What's different about senior people? We do this interview. We start developing a program. I made a DVD of the interviews I did with the CEOs. This was recommended in Fortune magazine and came out in, I think it was 04 or 06. The title, it's not in print anymore. It's called Speaking to the Big Dogs is what it's called. You can get all this stuff on our webpage, by the way, because it's all been upgraded. This is the book I wrote on it called Speaking Up, Surviving Executive Presentations. The webpage is www.powerspeaking.com. So all of that stuff will be there. So I ended up doing this book. We ended up coming out with a DVD. Since we launched the program in roughly 2003, about more than 10,000 people have taken this training through our company. I look back on it, I thought, you know, this was expensive, making the DVD, the book, all of the class material. We estimated it cost us around $700,000 to produce this new product. We're a little tiny company. This is a huge amount of money for us. Of course, it was over time. But then I also looked at what we had, what our return had been on that investment. We have brought in revenue of about $15 million based on that. Based on that $700,000, $15 million in revenue for that program. And we're noted in the industry for having the expertise in this. But all of that happened because we were able to change direction quickly, bring our videos out, meet with CEOs, and off we went. So recommendation is be more like Miles Davis than Beethoven.
This is Ann Clark. You're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is 12 Mind-Blowing Success Secrets for Small Businesses. Come and learn some uncommon wisdom with Rick Gilbert, founder of Power Speaking Incorporated, a speech communication training company in Redwood City. Ahead of us now from Rick are going to be relationships, humor, and partnership. Here we are, Rick.
All of my future presentations are going to feature Ann Clark coming along to help, you know, give us little road signs as we go along. Very helpful. The next point is relationships. And I said earlier that if you remember three things from this deal, relationships are critical, taking risks is critical, and who your partner is critical. The relationship part, we've worked with three different PR firms along the way. Not much came with that. I mean, and they want, you know, $5,000 a month, and it's going to take at least a year, and we're going to get you in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and blah, blah, blah. Phone never rang. No emails came in. What did work for us is treating our current clients with respect and doing things like putting on seminars where we invite all of our clients to come for an afternoon. We had one, for example, of cross-cultural communication. Just absolutely terrific. And 100 of our clients are there, wine and cheese, a little band. In fact, Ken French, he's a jazz piano player right here. And so he was there with his quartet, and that was great. And clients love that sort of stuff. One of the things we did just this last year I thought really worked is a guy called me up. His name is Brad Webb, and he's a sailor, and he's on the Oracle sailing team. You remember they had the big race out here in the bay? He was on that yacht. He was one of the sailors. And he has an old yacht, which is about 2007, I think. He's making a business around it and wanted to get better with speaking. I said to him, tell you what, let's trade services. I'll give you presentations training, and you take us out on the bay. Now, he can take 20 people. So what we did is we got our 20 best clients, go down to Pier 39, and we go out for the bay for 3 hours. And I can't tell you, this 90-foot mast like this, and we're leaning over like this, slicing through the water, under the Golden Gate Bridge and back. Our clients are loving every minute of it. That's the way that you build your business, not with PR, at least not for a small company. So I want to talk just a moment about humor. Again, this is absolutely critical, I think, because business can be dull and dry. Sometimes I used good judgment, and sometimes I did not. We were setting up a program with the IRS here locally in San Francisco. This was way before all that other stuff I mentioned. And the conversation was really boring. The guy had this big, deep voice. He was droning on, well, how much is this going to cost us? You know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, this needs a little humor. So I said, well, Bill, I'll tell you what. We'll give you the program for half price if you don't audit us. There was this long silence. Bill, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. I don't think he actually knew I was kidding. But we actually got the program. But that was where humor didn't work so well. Another example where it did, I was on the phone just this recently, a couple months ago, because I retired and I'm collecting all my funds and getting things together. And so I was talking to my bank, Bank of the West, and I'm talking to this guy in Ohio somewhere. And again, you know, it's this real dull, dry thing. And if this has happened to you when you get your credit card thing going on, the guy says, What was your mother's maiden name? You heard that? Yeah. What high school did you go to? You know, all of that's going on. What was your first car? I was expecting any minute he'd say, what was the name of the girl that gave you your first French kiss? But how'd you know that? No. Anyway, I was getting fed up with this, you know. So I finally said, you know what, Bob? I'm not Frederick Gilbert. I've got Gilbert tied up in a chair and I have a cattle prod. And every time you ask me, you know, what was your mother's maiden name? Tell me, Gilbert. No, not the prod. Ah! Johnson. In 30 minutes, this guy, I mean 30 seconds, this guy was laughing so hard. And he said, you know, my job doesn't have a lot of humor in it because for some reason people don't think their money is very funny. And he said, you made my day. And I said, you know, you made mine. Because there was an example of humor being used in a way, and it just really helped grease the skids. So use humor, but use good judgment. Now, the last thing I'd like to mention to you has to do with who your partner is. Absolutely critical. And I knew this in my gut, but I read a quote by Scott McNeely, who was the founder and CEO of Sun, as you may remember. And he was talking to a group of entrepreneurs, budding wannabe entrepreneurs. And he said, the most important thing, the most important decision you'll ever make, the most important decision you will ever make is who you decide to have babies with. And what he was saying was, who's your partner in life? He said, if the two of you aren't on the same beam, the same wavelength, it's going to be miserable. And I found that in my interviews with the CEOs, and they said, a couple of them said, look, my first marriage went down the tubes and stuff because I was gone all the time. If you're running your own business, as you know, you have a full-on, full-throated, high-octane career, pedal to the metal, and you're going to be traveling a lot, you're going to be working 60-hour weeks, and if your partner doesn't buy into that and say, why aren't you home? You know, we're in the Girl Scout meeting, and blah, blah. You can't handle it. I mean, it just goes away. I did a program about this to the Hult Business School down here about a year ago. A woman came up afterwards, and she said, I just broke up with my boyfriend because I told him I want to be a CEO, and this is my life. And he didn't want that. And I said, congratulations. You know, you'll find the right person. But don't get mixed up with somebody who doesn't see the same vision that you have for it. Those are the soft seven. And before we do a wrap-up, I know that Ann has to do a little closing, and I have a special wrap-up for you. So I'd love to get your thoughts about some of these. How is this ringing bells for you? Did it make sense? Did it not make sense? Just jump in. Any thoughts to it about it? Yes, please.
Thanks for sharing all this wonderful information, Rick. And quite a few of these things really apply to our small business. We're musicians, so things change constantly. So we're always improvising. And the thing that I really that resonates with me, not just the partnership, but about calculated risks. That's our life. That's what we do. We have to do our homework and we have to jump in. Thank you for sharing that. That was important.
So this is a very small business, just two of them, and they run jazz programs around, and they both play separately from each other and then often with each other. And it's just, I mean, so how intimate and so important that you're on the same wavelength. Other reactions to those things?
Yes, in my last startup, I found that improvisation was absolutely critical. Our first product was going along, and we had an opportunity to have a plan B, which I talked our CEO into. And it was really important because the first product didn't work out, and now they're off and running with the second product. So it's now called the pivot. But yeah. It's really improvisation.
Good. So true. You have to be able to know when to dump it and when to move forward. And, of course, it's all mixed up with risk-taking as well, isn't it? Other reactions? Mm-hmm. Sure.
So about relationships, I am an acupuncturist. And before that, I was doing a lot of research in public health, looking at the healthcare system and delivery of healthcare. And so I think that that's often missing in healthcare, because patients are often just treated as patients are just treated as clients and commodities, and there isn't that much focus on building a relationship, and that's, I think, the key to building a business.
I think that's so true. So your bedside manner is important as your business model. You're an acupuncturist? I've been up here for about an hour and a half. Afterwards, would you mind? Do you have your needles with you or anything?
I might have some in the car.
So, Anne, how are we time wise? I know you have to do a little closing business, and I have a wrap up too. So,
any questions from the audience that you would really like to ask? And this has been a great audience, by the way. Thank you for joining us and
being with us.
Could you tell me about the balance between contractor and employees, and how fast you fire someone? How do you balance that?
Not fast enough. I don't know what you mean exactly by the balance between employee and a contractor. Maybe you can elaborate quickly because we're just about out of time. Just be very careful about that you don't get audited. Check with your CPA. Make sure you've got the right qualities and so forth. This person truly is a contractor.
We'll talk after.
Okay. This is Ann Clark, and you're listening to the Commonwealth Club of California. Our program tonight is 12 Mind-Blowing Success Secrets. I'm going to get those S's all out sometime soon. For small success secrets, for small businesses, come and learn some uncommon wisdom with Rick Gilbert, founder of Power Speaking Incorporated, a speech communication training company in Redwood City. Unfortunately, we've come to the part of our program when we must end, as you said. Everything does end at a certain point. And what I want to do before we end is to give a big thank you to Rick Gilbert, the founder of Power Speaking Incorporated, from being with us tonight and sharing all of this, the good, bad, and indifferent. I certainly enjoyed every one of the points, and it was really great to do that. And I also want to thank the audience for being here and being interested and being able to comment on what Rick has brought to us. And finally, there's one other group that we need to thank, and that's our audience on the radio and internet. You can find our programs at you can access and download programs by clicking on the multimedia section on the Commonwealth Club website. And before Rick finishes for us, I want to also let you know that we are going to have our first environmental program for the fall, September 23rd. If you're interested, it's going to be with Tom Seamstrom, the outdoors writer for the SF Chronicle, and it's called The Wilder Side of Life. So come and join us. I hope you will on September 23rd. And now I'm going to give this over to Rick, and I'm sure he will tell us what is going to happen.
I'm going to wrap up very quickly here. First, a quick story. There's a new book out called The Wright Brothers by David McCullough. It's a fabulous book. Just loved it. And the final chapter, in fact, the final paragraph, happens in 1910. And this is, remember, they did their first flight in 1903. So by now, they were world famous. They were making airplanes. They'd made quite a bit of money. And everybody in the Wright family had gone up on the plane except the father. The father was 82 years old. His name was Bishop Wright. And so Bishop Wright, they're doing a big demonstration at Dayton, Ohio. About 3,000 or 4,000 people came to watch. And Dayton Wright kind of goes hobbling up to the plane, gets on board with his son Orville, and they take off. And they keep going higher and higher. They went as high as they had ever gone that day, 2,700 feet. And Orville reported that the only thing his father said was, "Higher, Orville! Higher! Higher, Orville! Higher!" And what I hope is that you have somebody in your corner who's saying to you, "Take it higher."
Relationships will make it grow, and risk will be the key. Your partner's help will make it flow. These tips will set you free.
This is Ann Clark, Chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Member-Led Forum. And again, many thanks to Rick Gilbert, and thank you for coming tonight, and thank the audience on the Internet. And we really are enjoying this, Rick, and thank you for this really practical, down-to-earth honesty that we found. This meeting of the Commonwealth Club of California, celebrating more than 112 years of enlightened discussion in the know, is adjourned.